go to the audition, enjoy it while you're there, and then at the end, forget about it and find something fun to do afterwards.
Welcome to the Behind the Scenes podcast. This is Michael Golab. Today I'm talking to Nancy Bishop. Nancy Bishop, CSA, is an award-winning casting director who works internationally from offices in London and Prague. She's a founding member and former president of the Casting Society of America's European branch. With over 100 major feature film and television projects among her credits, Nancy's cast hundreds of actors throughout Europe, the United Kingdom, and the US. Nancy's been retained as casting director by dozens of major screen producers and directors, including Sacha Baron Cohen on Borat, subsequent movie film, for which she won a CSA Artios Award for Best Casting of a Comedy. Other credits include working with Brad Bird on Mission Impossible 4, Bong Joon-ho on Snowpiercer, and Matthew Weiner on The Romanoffs. She was also nominated for an Emmy Award for her casting work on Anne Frank, The Whole Story, for ABC and Disney Studios. Nancy's newest book, Auditioning for Film and Television, a Post-Me Too Guide, is now available. We talk about the significance of finding your place within the industry, how to get rid of the need to impress, and so much more. We also have a donation link in the show notes below now. It's called Buy Me a Coffee. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd be immensely grateful if you could leave a very small or big one-off donation, which helps us with the maintenance cost of the whole endeavor and just helps us continue making the podcast better. Thanks so much for your support. And now, I bring you Nancy Bishop.
Nancy, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
What do you love the most about working as a casting director?
I'm a storyteller, like most people in the business. We were drawn to the business because we love storytelling, and I just love to be part of these, telling all these different stories. And you know, the work changes every day, and I've had the opportunity to work on so many wonderful projects, and it never gets boring because the material is always fresh.
Why would you say is storytelling important? What do you personally find in it that keeps you going and that makes you want to tell these stories?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain stories that I think are important to tell and others that are just fun to tell, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm working on a project now that's just a fun love story. And I think there are times when people just need a fun love story to take their mind off of whatever's bothering them. Other times there might be just pulling one out of that I've worked on in the past. When I worked on The Liberator, I thought that was an important story because I didn't think many people knew that the American troops that liberated Dachau were composed of Mexican Americans and Native Americans, for example, you know, so I thought that was an important story to tell. Borat, I mean, that was quite an extraordinary film, but I mean, you know, of course that moment with Rudy Giuliani was quite extraordinary.
Oh yeah, God.
Bit of storytelling. So, you know, I mean, like some stories are important to tell and some stories are just nice to tell, but I mean, that's what I like about my job, I guess, because that just returning to the question.
Fair enough. That's crazy that Rudy Giuliani's in. That's obviously all real, right?
Mm-hmm.
How was it working with Sacha Baron Cohen?
Well, he's, you know, very, very determined, and although he's funny on screen, he's a very serious professional person and right straight to work. I mean, it's not like when you're sitting around with him, he's telling lots of jokes. I mean, he's going right. He's very serious filmmaker, actually.
I kind of grew up on his Ali G.
Right.
I think we all used to quote a lot from that stuff. So, yeah, I've always been a fan of his stuff too.
That comedy is a serious business though.
Oh yeah. Oh, he's very bold with what he does. It's just completely nuts. You've also just written your new book, Auditioning for Film and Television, a Post Me Too Guide.
Yes.
What makes you want to keep sharing your experience?
Yeah, thanks for asking about that. I felt like after the last one, I was like, no, I'm not going to write anymore. And then so many things changed in the casting industry that I just felt like I had to write another one. And frankly, I was a little bit embarrassed. I am a little bit embarrassed by the title of my first book, which was Secrets from the Casting Couch, because it was just kind of a joke at the time. But it's not a joke. It's actually quite a serious thing. For me at the time, it was not anywhere near my experience. So that's why I felt like I could make a joke about it. I mean, there is no casting couch in my office for sure. But it is something that's real and that has come to light, all the different experiences that people have had, and the need to revise the casting experience. So that's why I felt like I had to write the post Me Too guide, because now, and I cover this a lot in the book, for example, we have all of the casting associations have very specific guidelines for auditioning for scenes involving nudity, for example, that weren't so well established before. I mean, some, like SAG and Equity and some of the actors' associations had approached these things. But now we're just much more conscious of that, for example. And there's all kinds of regulations, or not, I shouldn't say regulations, but guidelines. That will help actors feel more comfortable. More and more actors are asked to do scenes involving nudity or intimacy. So we have to be more aware of it. Also, the profession that has emerged recently, and certainly since the printing of my last book, is the profession of the intimacy coordinator. And so Ita O'Brien is one of the big mothers of that profession. And I have extensive interviews with her in my book, for example. And she does a lot of awareness anyway. But that's a very important new job, that just like there's a stunt coordinator, you don't ask people to just take swords and start going at each other. It's the same with an intimacy coordinator or, you know, a dance choreographer. They don't say, okay, just get out there and do a few steps. They choreograph it. And so that's a very important job. And so I'm talking about that a lot in the book, and orienting actors for what that job is and what questions to ask. And so I felt like the book was really necessary.
Mm. And it's available on Amazon now.
It's available anywhere. It's just on pre-order now at this moment. Maybe by the time the podcast comes out, it will be available.
You can also get it. You can also get it on your Kindle, just to let people know.
Yes, yes.
And it arrives straight away. And it's quite an encyclopedia, I have to say. So everyone make sure to check it out.
But you haven't. Have you read it?
Oh, yeah, I've read it.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Oh, I didn't know it was available already.
It's available. You can get it on your Kindle like straight away. Yeah. No, it's really good. It's as I said, it's...
So it is available already.
Because I had your last book as well, the one before
that. Oh, thanks for reading it. Oh, my well, God, it's out in the world. Okay, I heard it here, first time.
I don't come unprepared, Nancy.
But I mean, I thought that it... I guess it's just the paper version of the book that isn't available.
Oh, yeah, that takes a while.
Okay. Well, but, thanks. I learned something new today.
But there's a lot of interviews you added as well. One's with Luke as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of new information and yeah.
Well, I added there's a lot of other stuff, you're right, that's not to do with Me Too. Like I think I have a chapter called How to Get an Agent. Mm. Because people always want to know, and there's not a formula for that. I just was talking to a couple agents about, and everybody's different. So I did include that because that's a question people always have.
And just for people who don't know, Luke Chowdhury is Nancy's agent as well.
Yes.
And he's been on the podcast as well. So yes. Make sure to listen to that too. And you've been working with Luke for how long now?
Oh, maybe 4 years or
4 years.
Yeah.
What are you actually, because you're usually... actors ask other actors like about their agents. What are you looking for in a good agent as a casting director?
Well, for a casting director, I mean, it's just we want somebody to deal with our contracts, really. And I mean, I think it's the same for everybody, and including actors. I think actors think that all their problems will be solved when they have an agent, and the agent will get lots of work for them. And it, really, you have to get your own work, and then the agent will... I mean, I don't like dealing with with contracts for myself or negotiations. So that's you want somebody who can do a good contract and a good negotiation for you.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. What would your main advice be to someone who'd like to succeed in casting?
Oh, for casting, I think everybody comes to the profession in a different way. You ask most casting directors, I mean, there are exceptions, but a lot of casting directors, they started in something else. Like Andy Pryor, I think he started as a stage manager, for example. Mm. I even know Sheila Jaffe, somebody I've worked with, and she used to run a restaurant in New York, and she knew lots of actors. A lot of people come into it from... maybe being an assistant director. I mean, I happen to come into it from theater, from being a theater director. But I think if you know what you want to be a casting director, then the best way to start out is by assisting somebody else. So try to pick up, and I have a wonderful assistant working for me right now, Elisa Musson, she was just still in school, and she said, I'd like to help you. And so she just was volunteering for me for a while, and then I gradually, you know, brought her in, and now she's an assistant for me, an official paid assistant. So, and then if she does that long enough, then she becomes an associate, maybe to me or to somebody else, and then eventually she makes her own contacts and goes out into the world.
Oh, cool. And what would be your main advice for someone who'd like to succeed in acting, apart from make your own work and... Don't sit on your couch.
See, you already know that that's what I was going to say. Yeah, because that is what I usually say. I say, you know, don't wait for the phone to ring. And I would still say that. And I also say a lot that there is no formula for it, because everybody makes their way in a different way. So stay busy. I don't know, this has just popped into my head now, but for anybody who saw this film that's just out, Being the Ricardos, I never knew that Lucille Ball had done so much radio work. They told her, oh, you have a voice for radio. So she did this radio job, and that's how I Love Lucy got made, actually. It was quite, I mean, that's an example, right, of she didn't particularly want to do radio work, but she had a good show. And so there's many different ways that you can... that you can succeed.
What advice would you give to a younger self?
What's interesting is that when I was younger, I assumed that when I was working for somebody that they always knew what they were doing and that I should try to impress them. And now looking back on it, sometimes I realize that sometimes the producers and the directors that I was working with were also quite like, were kind of flying by the seat of their pants and didn't necessarily know what they were doing. And it's not always about impressing other people. It's about, you know, listening and supporting other people. And and I think that's good advice for anybody, really, is, I always assumed, okay, these guys are really powerful that I'm working with these producers and directors and they know what they're doing. And sometimes they were just as insecure as I was when I was young, you know?
So everybody's kind of winging it.
And yeah.
Yeah. Oh, nice. So in a way it means don't worry too much and don't try to like be true to yourself. Don't.
Well, also try to listen to what they need from you. Yeah. And I think it would be, if there are any actors listening to this, I don't know who the most of your audience is, but same with actors. I mean, when you go into a callback or whatever, listen to them and see what they need from you. They need to know that you're going to listen to their notes and take them and work well with them, you know, and support their vision.
Because thinking about it, your way makes you maybe approach the whole situation in a calmer way.
Well, yeah, I would hope so. And
Do you have a letting go ritual? Anything you do to find peace at the end of a stressful day?
I should have. That's a good idea. I don't know. I do a lot of yoga, but
that's what I thought. Yeah, I think you talk about it in your book as well.
Perhaps.
I think you do, yeah. What kind of yoga do you do?
I'm kind of embarrassed because I wrote my book so long ago. Now I can't remember what I said. I do all different kinds of yoga, but yeah, I mean, I think that yoga is good. I'm not very good at meditating. Everybody tells you should meditate, so that's as close as I get to it.
But all the positions in yoga, they're quite meditative, right? It's just meditation and
Well, motion. It's a lot of breathing, yeah. And yeah. I think the idea is you're supposed, it's a kind of moving meditation.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's good for hyper people.
You do that every day?
Most days.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What would you say are the greatest mistakes that people make in the acting business?
I've talked about a lot, I mean, and it's a little bit on the same theme that I just said, which is that actors come in and they're thinking, how can I stand out? That's one of the things that I noticed. They want to stand out when really what you want to do is you want almost the opposite. You want to stand in to the role. You know what I mean? You want to fit into the role. And you, again, it goes back to storytelling. You want to be part of the story and you want to tell the story, right? So think about what is the story that's being told and where does this character fit into the story and how can you best embody that character in telling the story. So it gets back to this very basic things that Stanislavski talked about, which is what is the character's objective. So your objective might be, I want to get this role, right? Yeah. So you're going in to the room thinking, I want the role. That's not the character's objective, right? The character's objective is something else, like just to get the money or to get the guy, get the girl or whatever it is in that scene. So yeah, try to let go of what you want, which is to impress or whatever, and think about how that character fits into the story. Mm.
Don't make it about yourself, but focus on the story.
Yeah. Mm.
How has a failure or apparent failure set you up for later success? Do you have a favorite failure?
I mean, I would say that there were jobs that I thought I really wanted and I didn't get, and they just forced me to look for other things to do that turned out to be maybe more interesting. I don't know if that makes sense. But I can, I mean, looking back a long time ago, I used to do theater many years ago. I was a theater director and I had my own theater company in Prague, and I took great lengths to get this board of directors in place that would keep the theater going and would look after the money, the stuff I didn't like doing, you know, like raising money and stuff like that. And anyway, I ended up appointing a board of directors that took themselves way too seriously. And they ended up firing me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And actually, it was like the best thing that ever happened to me, because actually the theater company was quite a burden. And I went off and then I started, you know, taking more work in casting, which was my next career, which turned out to be quite a good career for me. So theater was just a way of being poor, really. I was just very poor. And I didn't know that I had any skills, actually. but it turns out I did, because, you know, I was good at getting performances out of actors. I did that as a theater director. I could get performances out of actors because you're working, I would say in theater that as a director, you're working quite intensely with the actors, more maybe sometimes more than in film, because in film you have all these other considerations as well. So I had that skill and I used it in the casting room. So I was glad. I was like, oh, wow, this is, I actually know how to do something that can make money. Because, of course, it was working in film was much better money than working in theater, too.
What was their reasoning for firing you?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Can I remember the details? They didn't like some of the choices that I made. Mm. They didn't like some of the, I mean, some of it was about artistic freedom. I thought they thought some of the stuff that I was choosing was too edgy or whatever. I can't really remember. But they basically just got too big for themselves. And then actually, like nobody wanted to take my job as artistic director when I left. So then the whole thing closed.
Oh, no.
It folded. Yeah, oh, it's no. Okay. It's a funny wow. story now.
That's a great story. Is there anything you used to believe strongly that you've changed your mind on recently in the past few years? Or
I think a lot of people say that talent always floats to the top, and like if you're talented, you will succeed somehow. And unfortunately, I think that there are many talented people actually who don't end up having the careers that maybe they deserve, unfortunately, because there are so many different variables that go into success. And for example, there's like what I call zeitgeist. I didn't originate the term zeitgeist, but it's a term that, I mean, it works a lot for projects. I mean, there are lots of projects, for example, that cross my desk that maybe a very talented writer wrote, and it's good writing, but because it doesn't hit the zeitgeist of the moment, like people aren't doing period films or whatever, like at that particular moment, the streamers aren't looking for period films, and a period film lands on my desk, something like that. Might not happen. So just because it was a good writer and good writing, there's a lot of good projects that don't get made. And then there's another project that I might find quite irritating that gets made because it's whatever it goes with the zeitgeist. If you were a mixed race actor a few years ago, you might not have found the zeitgeist in your favor. This was quite a few years ago now when Vin Diesel made his film Multifacial about how hard it was to get work as a mixed race actor. Well, now it's much different. So that's zeitgeist too. That's so there might have been like a very talented mixed race actor working in, I don't know, or wanting to work, let's say, in the 1970s or something, who never made it. For example.
It's a very good point, because when you enter this industry, I think people, in order to persevere, have to have a very strong, in a way, belief in themselves. And and when you don't get as lucky, or you don't like fit into the whole zeitgeist thing, or whatever gets produced or made, it can be tricky. But again, I suppose that's where you'd say produce your own work. Like what Vin Diesel did there.
Yes,
yes. Produce his own work.
Yes, that's a perfect example, yeah. Oh, it was like a 10-minute film or something, basically, about him going around to different auditions and never getting cast. Because he was never quite right, yeah.
But also add to that, I feel like a lot of people produce their own work because they want the agent to sign them or the casting director to find them. But I think if that's your only reason, I think that might not be enough. You really need to believe in the story you create. You really need to
do
it because for the love of it. Because if your only objective is to impress people again, then you might be very disappointed.
Yes, you should absolutely find something that you care about. That's right. Yeah. And not everybody who's an actor is a writer too. So you might have to team up with somebody who's a writer or whatever. Mm. Yeah.
What are your plans for the future? What are the main things on your bucket list?
Well, I'm still, want to keep casting. And I also have, as we're talking about, some stories that I want to tell too. So I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't have everything lined up right now. But I do have some projects that I'm producing as well. So yeah, that's my kind of next career step, is to produce as well as cast. And sometimes people ask me if I want to direct, and I really don't, because I think everybody has their place where they fit, and I know that I don't have the patience for it. I was on set recently for something that I was working on, and I love going to set and hanging around for a little while and having lunch and then leaving. I really don't have the patience to do what the director does and really sit there and make sure each shot is perfect and wait for them to set up the lights and everything. And so, yeah, so I think casting is the right place for me. And I think that producing, like in the kind of development stages. Like, and that's a lot of the reason a lot of casting directors get into producing is because attaching talent is so important in the early stages of developing something.
So producing, because you also started out as an actress, is that correct?
Not really. I mean, I did get my degree in acting and directing, but by the time I had graduated, I knew that I was not going to be a career actor. I had already kind of realized that. But I did. But I've done some acting, certainly. I've certainly done some acting, but I think I liked directing more, maybe.
Quite a lot of casting directors were actors or directors,
I find.
It's really interesting. Because I suppose that gives you a different approach to giving someone a direction or telling someone how to change their performance.
Yeah, we know what it's like to be on the other side.
Yeah. Where can people find you? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, I mean, I'm publicly available. I have a website, and my address is on IMDb. I have a lot of people writing to me all the time, and actors mostly, and they want me to see their material. And I get stuff every day, several times a day, from actors. And what I do is I have a standard email I send out, and I just say, thank you for contacting me. I can't reply to everybody, but I give information about my book and interviews I've done. Maybe I'll add this one, you know, just because I want to be able to help people. I've done a lot of training work and support work and writing, and every Tuesday I have a casting tip, and so I try to put stuff out in the world for actors. It's not necessarily a casting director's job to do that. There are a lot of casting directors who don't, which is fine. I think a lot of casting directors won't, like, if you write to them and send them your CV or your clip or whatever, you probably will get nothing back from them, I'm guessing. And not because they're terrible people, but because they don't have time to respond to everybody. And the thing I always say to actors is that casting directors are project-oriented, and agents are looking generally for talent. You know, I'm not looking just generally for talent. I'm looking for specific talent on specific days. So, you know, it's possible if you wrote to me and on that particular day I needed, you know, like a German-speaking actor who was tall and or whatever, that I might write back and say, oh, yeah, you're what I'm looking for at this moment. But usually not. So, yeah.
And you're on Instagram, too, and on Facebook and everywhere.
Yeah, I'm on social media. Yeah.
What makes you do the Casting Tip Tuesday thing?
Because I like to be able to help actors to be better. And of course, that makes my job easier if actors are better. I want actors to be good, and I want them to know what to do when they come in the room.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's so funny. I've given this tip a couple of times. Like, I'm about to give it again probably, but my little pet peeve that absolutely makes me crazy is I hate it when actors show their hand, like they come and they say, hi, these are my profiles and these are my hands, and they put their hands in front of me. And I know that maybe that's important for commercials or whatever, but I absolutely hate it.
Yeah. There's another really funny bit in your book where you write about if you see another headshot with someone putting their finger in their mouth or something like that, or their hand in.
Yeah, you just... I don't like hands headshots.
So
anyway, I like to get the information out. So whenever I see somebody putting their hands, I'm like, oh my God, you didn't listen to my casting tip Tuesday when I said not to do that. It's kind of like being a teacher, you know, it's like if you're a fifth grade teacher, every year you have new students and you have to teach the same material. So I sometimes have to repeat my... Because not everybody, of course, watches all of the casting tips. But I did used to teach, too. I have taught a lot. So I have a teacher in me, I guess. So I like to help people. Yeah. I don't necessarily have time when I'm casting. Somebody comes in the room And I don't have a lot of time to direct them. I mean, there's a certain amount of time allocated, and it's not necessarily my job to teach somebody to act or whatever. When I'm working for a production, my time belongs to the production, not to the actor.
Any parting words, last thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
Oh, what are my parting words? Who are your listeners mostly? Are they actors or are they filmmakers or...
There's a lot of actors, but there's filmmakers and directors, and there's also people who have absolutely nothing to do with the business.
Hi, Luke. Come on in, Luke. This is my last question, so the timing's perfect. Hey, come on, Binky. I'll give some advice that, to be honest... Oh, there's my little doggy.
I didn't get growled at, Luke.
I'll give some advice that honestly I'm not that good at taking myself sometimes, because you said, do you have any way of releasing at the end of the day? And so I would say to actors, go to the audition, enjoy it while you're there, and then at the end, forget about it and find something fun to do afterwards. You know, buy yourself an ice cream or take a fun walk, go to a class that you like or something so that you can... not think about it too much. And to filmmakers, I would give the advice of follow the career. So when you're watching a film, start to make lists of actors that you like, and keep your own lists. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Also, a bit of self-love and all of that. Also, for our listeners, Luke Chowdhury's just come in. Has been on the show before. What are your parting words for our audience?
Nothing. I think Nancy says it all.
Nancy says it all.
Oh, that's a good cop out.
Great.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Great. Thanks for your interest in the book and everything. Okay. Take care.
Thanks for listening. If you find this podcast valuable, it'd be amazing if you could leave a very small or big one-off donation, which helps us with the maintenance costs of the podcast and also helps us continue making it better. Link's in the show notes of the episode, and it's called Buy Me a Coffee. If you cannot donate, you can leave us a short 5-second review on Apple Podcasts and share the episode on social media. It really helps other listeners find the show. And make sure to subscribe to get the next episode. Thanks so much for your support.